Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody. This is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from Booger County and the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. And our guest is Chief Hugh Gibbs. Go ahead and introduce yourself, Chief, and tell the folks about your band and who you are.
My name's Hugh Gibbs, and I head the Etowah Idawa Hightower Cherokee Nation out of Tennessee. We were given acknowledgement in 1978, and we're basically descended from other towns of people that were exempted from the removal. We number about 100 people. Some have heard of us and some haven't. I tend to, you could say, hold a tight rein on the community, so I have our people stay away from powwows and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know, but you know, powwows came along in the 40s.
Yeah.
My dad, you know, I grew up in the communities, and my dad always told me that, you know, at one time you could get black folks to buck dance and they stopped, but now you can throw out a couple of dollars and you can get an Indian to buck dance.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, we was here, you know, what I was taught is we just call them gatherings.
Mm.
And, but powwow's it's an Algonquin word.
True. And it's not native to our people or our ways. You know, we had basically seven ceremonials, and those that are now Christian, you know, we had on Christmas, there's now 8 ceremonies. So we feel like our mandate and our duty is to try to keep that going.
Well, I first heard about you through Deani Wahoo. And I guess she was a formerly a member of your band and now has her own band up in Vermont, I guess.
But that wasn't a parting, though, in disagreement. You know, originally, thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago, you know, all the Iroquoian people lived all continuous and contiguous to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So she has her home up there in Vermont, and, you know, she approached me about, you know, doing her thing up there in the Green Mountains. And since we're basically mountain people, and that's kind of close to the other Iroquoian people, I had no problem with it.
Sure.
It's not like it's a hostile thing or anything. It's just she's holding down her end of the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's traditional. You know, if people want to go form their own community, it's part of the Iroquois Great Law, too. You know, sometimes it's just because people want to go somewhere else, and sometimes it is because there are disagreements, but it's, you know, it doesn't mean you're not friends anymore, you're not a good person or anything like that. It's just traditional.
True, and that's why you've never heard me or come across me making any statements against her or her community or her efforts.
That's right. Well, we've had a few Cherokee guests on, but we never really had a chance to talk about Cherokee origins and Cherokee cosmology, and there's some things that have been written, and so I thought it'd be interesting to get your view of what you were taught by your family.
No, I have no problem with that. We always hold an open door open to anyone that's, you know, native or natural, because we're taught that it's a Cherokee place to make all these strangers in the land eventually reflect the soil and, you know, be brown people.
Mm-hmm. So where did, the Kituwa origin story says that we, ostensibly that we migrated to North America from, that we used to live on an island off the coast of what's now South America that sank. And there's also another story that in 1750, Atakulakula pulled the nation together and said that even before that, you know, we migrated from across the Eastern Ocean. So tell us what you know.
Well, there's some truth in that. I always like to tell people, go back to, I think it's the 1807 treaty, and you'll see in there that the old elders said that the seven clans were originally tribes. So up until that treaty, there weren't seven clans. There are more than seven clans.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the clans came from across the ocean. As you take into account Atakulakula and, you know, his family,
mm-hmm.
that some accounts say were Algonquin, then you're tying into...
He was from Canada.
Huh?
Yeah, I understand he was from Canada. He was small in stature, and... And then I guess after he was in his 30s, he actually went home, you know, for a few years. And he, in my view, understood Cherokee adoption laws. And as a person who was either captured in war or somehow found his way into Cherokee Nation from outside, rose to its highest levels.
Well, our band actually descends from him and his family, you know. Dragon Canoe was one part of his family.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy Ward was his niece.
Mm-hmm.
And he also had a nephew named Turtle, or Turtle at Home. And
mm-hmm.
if you look on the 1835 census, you'll
mm-hmm.
see that Turtle, or Turtle at Home, was exempted. That's Turtletown, Tennessee.
Yep. So there was a Turtletown Treaty, as I recall.
Right.
That was the 18th.
So the people in Tennessee have a distinct and separate history. We were Aniuinya as opposed to Kituwa and Anikayukili. There was, up until like the 1880s, 1890s, there used to be a giant stone dog along the Cumberland River, and it was dynamited to make way for a railroad. So originally Cherokees held, and that was Doublehead and all of them, held that northern part of the state along the Kentucky border.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what
the Cumberland.
Right. That's what we descend from.
Right, the Cumberland. So actually you could really call yourself more, I understand that the Chickamauga people, ostensibly Wolf Clan, dominated that Cumberland Plateau.
And they were more a hostile element. That's
mm-hmm.
not to say, you know, the upper towns weren't hostile in their own way, because, you know, you had people like Abraham and things like that that raided along the Holston and all that. It's just as the settlers became more and more compact in the area, the old-timers took the position that we should just care about ourselves, you know, the white path, the harmony ethic, and things like that.
Well, yeah, they were the people of the thunder and lightning, the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation, and they controlled that Cumberland Plateau, and wore red and white, lightning bolt symbol, and...
And as I mentioned, I call you Geely. Within that word is Geely, or dog.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes back into that.
Well, the term I've heard is Aniotikwalaski. People of the thunder and lightning. And, yeah, it's a fascinating, what I've heard. You know, the little I know is just what I read on the Imperial Honest with you, you know. And then, you know, what is given out is portioned out, you know, not very liberally. So that's the reason why I'm excited to get you on here.
Now, we're talking, you know, like I said, thousands and thousands of years ago. You have
mm-hmm.
to remember that the old-timers called the sun Six Killer.
Mm.
That means that they were originally, well, now we're in the Seventh Age. But in the past, there were six ages, just like the Hopi talk about world ages, and
mm-hmm.
the Aztecs, and the Maya, and the Cherokee had that too. One of the problems with all the, and I've had the fortunate ability to interact with most of the communities in the East, those that were historically considered marginal, because as I said, I came out of those communities. And I found that one of the big problems is that most of the people have embraced a lot of the European ways, digested them, kicked them out, and now mouth them and work them as the old ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, see, that's how you, people like you and I get in trouble and get thrown out of their communities, because we call spades spades, and they don't like it. And, you know, they slander you, and so go ahead, I'm intrigued.
I tell people I don't lie to them. I might not say what you like. It might upset you, but I won't lie to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the work of Danny Troxell online? He and I used to correspond quite a bit, and he's just kind of disappeared.
No, as we were speaking, I told you, you know, I accidentally came across your website. In a sense, I'm a novice to the Internet. I've been drugging Internet and cell phones and things by my children.
Mm-hmm.
And they consider me a dinosaur, so they say, Dad, you got it, you know.
Well, Danny is Bird Clan, and he descends from Doublehead and Corn Blossom. And an interesting guy. He's got a still got a website up, but he was in Kentucky and was quite active with Kentucky AIM and worked pretty closely with Dennis Means for a while. But I understand he's left the state. I think he may have remarried or something and gone somewhere else. But he talked about the Kituwa being called the Great Ones of Green. And I wanted to query you about that, whether you knew anything about that. And but he talked quite a bit about the massacre that happened at Wahoo Falls, like, as I recall, it was 1810. And so anyway, I'll just shut up. And now that I told you what little I know, I'll listen.
Well, I know a little bit about the falls. the massacre and things like that. As I said, one of the things I've come across is how much has been digested and then thrown back out as Cherokee, but isn't really Cherokee.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we tend to, as a community, we tend to keep a low profile. But my dad comes out of that community that is, you know, derogatorily called Melungeons. And when I was a little kid, people that were Indian-blooded, looked Indian-blooded, were all brown-skinned, and there was just a few of them. They were up on a couple of ridges like Pine Mountain, Blackwater, places like that. Nowadays, you got, since the 60s and 70s, and it's in to be skinned, got a lot of people that run around and do a lot of things and work a lot of things, but when I was a kid, they would have been nowhere near or around them kind of people, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of people.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you. Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look, Nation. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, friends. This is Will Blue Otter. I have a message here from 1975 from John Wayne. It comes right out of today's headlines. So you Indian folks who are following the progressive trend in politics, you're following the people that supported slavery. You're following the people that have enslaved you ever since the Civil War. Listen to John Wayne.
You know, it's a funny thing, the Indians now. This AIM group have started something that now they're against me for some reason. But I am the only man in pictures that always gave them their human dignity. I never was in a picture. I never allowed myself at any time to do anything that would take their human dignity away from them. And that, to me, is the most important thing in a man. I have found that a certain type that calls himself a liberal, I always thought I was a liberal. I came up terribly surprised one time when I found that I was a right-wing conservative extremist, when I have listened to everybody's point of view that I ever met and then decide how I should feel. I mean, but this so-called new liberal group, Jesus, They never listen to your point of view, and they make a decision as to what you think, and they're articulate enough and in control of enough of the press to force that image out for the average person. For some reason, maybe it's these pictures, they have not been able to do that with me. In spite of what they say, people have not taken sides that I'm a, you know, it hasn't affected my career in popularity, let's say. In spite of the fact that they've tried to make it do it. There isn't a hell of a lot that we can do to change human behavior. We keep making laws to try and change human behavior. You can't do it. I think you can accept it and feel how you would feel in that position. You're being conned into Keynesianism and socialism now. But it isn't going to stop the selfishness of human behavior. It isn't going to stop the greed. If you take $20 and give a dollar to every son of a bitch in a room and come back a year later, one of the bastards will have most of the money. I mean, it's just human nature, and you're not going to whip it with a lot of laws. I think when you make people conscious, as communication gets better, and you make people conscious of somebody in trouble, starving or something like that, the average person will help. But of course now they've got so damn many charities and there's so much professionalism, you know, there's if you have a charity, you hire some professionals to work up the charity, and by the time you get the money, you get $4 for the recipient and $400 for the administrators. So, I mean, Christ, I think there are people who try to affect a thinking where they know more than some other son of a bitch and try to put a false impression on what human nature is. Christ sakes, we have proven that we go back to hope at the first opportunity. Just throw out a little fish and bam, they're out there ready to grab it. So we are optimistic. We have to be optimistic. Christ, what else would there be in life if you lose optimism?
So what I've heard is slightly different than, you know, what a lot of other people are saying.
Mm-hmm.
But we held the northern part of that area, Tennessee, Kentucky, which are both Cherokee words.
Mm-hmm.
But we also shared it with Shawnee people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the quote that Ridge made that, you know, some people asked him if the Cherokee people would ever disappear, and he said, the conqueror of the Shawnees, never.
Mm-hmm.
And even up here north of the Ohio, where I'm at, if you look in the historical accounts, most of the Shawnee fighting was really done by Cherokee mercenaries.
Mm-hmm.
Tecumseh's vision, you know, was that all the tribes were to be north of the Ohio. If you check Ohio history, everything from Chillicothe south, especially along the Paint Creek, was given by the Shawnee to Cherokee.
Mm-hmm. Well, his mother was Dragon Canoe's daughter.
Right.
So, you know, he was Shawnee royalty, I suppose you could say, but he was, you know, he was Cherokee.
Well,
and he was the arch apprentice of the Confederacy idea that was begun by Dragon Canoe.
Well, Well, up here before him was Pontiac, that, you know, the cars are named for.
Mm-hmm.
So he might have gotten some of that through Pontiac
mm-hmm.
and the Miamis that were have historically always been stronger than Pan Indians.
Mm-hmm. And other Lenape elders that had some of the same ideas.
Well,
going
back to the clans, you know, we took in the Delawares and the Shawnees out in Oklahoma Territory.
Mm-hmm.
So in a lot of ways, we tie in with Asia and with the Sunken Island.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to some of the old Iroquois, we even tie in with the Vikings.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got the, you know, we had the red hair, green eyes and blonde hair and blue eyes, and, you know, Chief Rogers says, you know, that's, we've been that way, you know,
forever.
And, you know, when you hear the accounts of the Easter Island people and people from, ostensibly might have been from Mu, you know, it's the same kind of mixture, which is kind of interesting.
Now, politically speaking, that's one of the reasons why I'm against all this DNA testing, because, you know, as a sovereign nation, our people took in anyone who stood with us.
That's right.
And when you start talking that DNA stuff, it's just another way of weeding us out and creating a whole new group of hostile people against us, dividing
us. What I heard, I don't know if it's true or not, but what I heard was that if people showed up, say a family wandered into our domain, they received an offer they couldn't refuse. You know, they were said, okay, you're in our domain. You know, you're us now. You know, you can think about this overnight, but, you know, if the husband isn't interested, if the male isn't interested in joining, you know, you're gone and we're still going to take your wife and kids. But is there any truth to that?
I was going to say, in essence, that's true, but that's how I became the Ugu or Ugu principal chief of our community. The old-timers approached me, and two times I turned it down. You know, I tell people, and a lot of people in the community know, that I just like the old-timers, or I liked hanging out with them, tipping a bottle with them, and, you know, they were just good people. I liked them. So they approached me twice. They said, we aren't going to approach you a third time.
Mm-hmm.
Either you accept the seat or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the seat. So what you're saying is basically true of the old way.
Right.
And a lot of the old timers, and that's how I was raised, when you come before them, they'll say to you, who are you? And when they're saying that to you, they're saying that you need to recite your name and your lineage, your clan, your town, your division. Just who are you? And that way they verify who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Because people have old memories.
Well, they, in Cherokee world is a small world too. And they might not know you, but they're going to know your great grandparents or somebody was in your family.
Exactly.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
But if I could digress about the green thing, you know, that's a prominent family within the tribe, just like, at certain points, Bell and some other families were prominent. But among us, we don't stress the color. We stress brown instead. Because, as I said, we say we're of the earth, and the earth is brown. Green is additionally not a primary color. So once again, that's that European influence.
All right. Yeah, I descend from the greens.
And as I say, you know, that's one of our... one of the Cherokee problems is that so much has bled in that... it's hard to pull out what's real and what's not real.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, we really did believe in a higher being. Well, we all really did believe in a higher being.
I was going to ask you, there was a schism originally between, you know, those that believed in the man above and those that believed in the Adawes.
Right. That's what I was just getting ready to get to, is that the split was around that divine being, whether it was a personified being or it was a force, which the other half of the community saw as the sun. That's where Duda comes in, sixth killer, and the prayers about sun, my creator, and then the worship of the fire, which is the earthly manifestation of the sun, and things like that. But that was supposedly a split that, you know, also took place long, long before Europeans ever came.
Thomas Males wrote about this. That's where I found out about it. You know, this was.
So that one divine being does have a name that shouldn't be spoken aloud.
Mm-hmm.
It can be written. It can be conveyed like that, but only at certain times should it be spoken aloud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only reference I've ever seen to him is the Cherokee word for the man above.
Right.
And it's very, very much the same kind of attitude that the proto-Hebrews had toward their God. And there's so many parallels.
And we were talking about the videotape that came out of Oklahoma in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Toward the end of that, if you notice, Elder Smith says that they are Israel. So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
there is some correlation in with that.
Yeah, it was really interesting. He said, he kind of mispronounced it. He says, we're Israel, you know, and that was a bombshell.
Mm.
But there, you know, there were so many, you know, I've talked about this with Elder Red Hat, and we thought that the relationship predated Israel, that we all may be Abrahamic peoples.
I would tend to agree with that because, you know, we talk about Aquahami, which is Abraham, and
mm-hmm.
Lucy, or Hazi, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
people like Ed Nuya, or Noah, or, so I would tend to agree.
Because mm-hmm. All the customs, you know, like cities of peace, and, you know, where people could be safe in case they accidentally murdered someone or killed someone, and, you know, Cherokees were real conscious of keeping things even,
mm-hmm.
and
purity laws.
Exactly, exactly. It was just the one that really shocked me, and the one that I took to Red Hat was what I learned from Denny Troxel, Denny Oguku. He said that we had a legend of the woman with stars above her and, you know, with the moon below her. And Red Hat said, he says, that is the symbol of Israel. And I just, oh my gosh, you know. But see, that symbol, you know, predates Israel too.
Right.
So there's got to be some ancient. You see, you know, Phoenicians were, you know, running around the oceans 4,000 and 5,000 years ago. So there's no problem with. They were probably the remnant of the ancient sea kings, and they were called red men, and they had a special dye. They wore red clothing. One of their other names was the Mauru, or the Maori, or the Mauritanians, and they were at one point chased out of the Mediterranean. So it's just too coincidental that the Maori people and the and others and the Japanese, all of their ships, we call them USS or SS. All their ships end with the word maru, and you get the word marooned from being taken captive at sea. I mean, possibilities are endless here.
I was going to add to that, you know, that the ancient Phoenicians and the ancient Kemets or Egyptians,
mm-hmm.
if you look at their imagery, the highest classes are always a red people.
Mm-hmm.
And they also had paradises in their western skies, which would be the Abyss.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of connection and correlation.
The spiritual camp in the West, it's amazing when you get into it. It's just mind-boggling. And
well, that's why, as a community, and we try to maintain the old ways, the upper town ways, we always talk about the ancient wars that we call them the Mingwe Wars that divided the Cherokee from the Iroquois. And, you know, just like in that series of movies, Highlander, they talk about the quickening and there can only be one. Supposedly 2,000-3,000 years ago, and this is why the Iroquoians have a bear clan and the Cherokee don't.
Mm.
And Cherokee are taught to honor every animal they kill except for the bear, because we're taught we're never to bow down to another man. Mm-hmm. Bears were originally humans.
That's right.
Some people who have hunted bear will tell you if you ever come across a bear skeleton, except for the feet and the paws and then the feet, their skeletons are exactly like human skeletons. So, going back to this ancient Mingwe war, in theory, there can only be one. Either the Iroquois or the Cherokee. And that's why in the 1750s, I think it was, England made the two groups, Cherokee and Iroquois, cease their genocidal war.
Uh-huh.
And that was a war of one fight and killed each other.
Uh-huh.
And most of, a lot of the Seneca ceremonies came into the Seneca nation through Cherokee captives. And that's why you have like things like Seneca rocks and things down in West
uh-huh.
Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were raiding down in the Cherokee country.
And place names in Missouri that were Seneca. Oh, yeah, Seneca, Missouri.
Exactly. So it's an ancient war that goes back that there can only be one of us. And just like the Hebraic people, we're a chosen people.
Well, you know, Chief Smith said it in that video, and I encourage everybody to go to KatuaSociety.org, watch the video. I can't remember if he said it or it was written, but the Katua, and by the way, the Katua Society does have Bear Clan. And some of the Chickamauga, I know the Chickamauga here in Missouri, they have an eighth bench at the stop dance that's in the north, and nobody sits on that bench. Instead of seven, there's eight benches. And I also know there are some full-bloods in Oklahoma that say that they come that their clan name comes from North Clan, which is kind of interesting. And
we're a very complex people, and I wouldn't doubt that. You know, the seven clans represent basically the seven bands of light, and it's divided.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but. Wesley Proctor, in his published version of the ELO back in the, I think it was like 1981, and that was financed by the federal government. So the government is very well aware of Cherokee people, our place in the scheme of things. And as Sitting Bull said, if we can only put our heads together, you know, it would be outrageous what we could get done. But I lost the thought.
That's true. Yeah, they.
So we probably do have, you know, bear clans and things. It's just our division.
Mm-hmm.
Was always taught that we never bow down to another man, and bears are amongst men.
Right, right. Yeah, that was the belief of the old Anikatugewi. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Old bear clan was that they were originally a human clan, and that the. Mm-hmm. Nation was starving, and that they went into the woods and they returned as bears and offered themselves as food to keep everybody else alive. You know, so that shows the
and our band is taught that in this ancient war that they chose to be with the Iroquois, to stand with the Iroquois, and that's when they were transformed.
Well, Mad Bear Anderson, you know, would have been, he was a Tuscarora, but he was Bear Clan,
he was well aware of the Etowah.
Mm-hmm. Well, from what I understand, you know, there was two original clans. Now, David Michael Wolfe told me, and maybe somebody else I spoke with about this, but he said there was two original clans. Oh no, it was the fellow that wrote the book about Dragon Canoe and the Confederacy, he's a, I'll run and grab the book in a minute, but he's a history professor at University of Tennessee at Martin.
I think I've seen it. I haven't read it, but I think I've leafed through it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you're talking about.
And I talked with him on the phone briefly a couple years ago. He said all clans are part of the Bear Clan. He says they all came out of the Bear Clan. And the original clans in the Eastern Hemisphere were started with Bear Clan.
That could be.
It's something very, very ancient.
The bear cult is a circumpolar cult. You know, it's found in Europe, mm-hmm. and Asia, North America. So mm-hmm. that could very well be true. But we're all taught, you know, that the clans originally were, well, we're all, just like I'm Sahane, and there's Jisqua and things like that. We're all taught that originally, you know, we were more than, well, even today we're more than human.
Uh-huh.
But then we were almost like movies nowadays with the lycanthropes and all that kind of stuff in it. And then as time has gone on, our nature's become more and more base, and we're more and more bound to this realm. But the legends say in the next cycle, at the end of that cycle, and, you know, if you go by progression of the equinoxes or something like that, that would be 2,167 years. But supposedly at the end of that, the people in mass will once again assume their more spiritual natures and eventually leave this realm altogether.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim superchargers your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Kind of reminiscent of what people think happened to the Mayans, because they, I guess the first Mayan civilization just up and disappeared.
Mm-hmm. And those timers talked about other groups of people that were here in the North America that also happened to.
Kind of like Enoch's people in the Bible just being translated, or, oh, by the way, that book we were talking about was Heart of the Eagle, Dragon Canoe and Emergence of the Chickamauga Confederacy by Brent Yanus B. Cox.
Yes, I
published in 1999. If you can get a copy, you'll pay a couple hundred bucks for it. Now, there is, the only copies I've seen there's so much in demand that the people are willing to pay those prices. And I didn't have a copy. I had read a copy back about 2000, belonged to a friend. But I was lucky enough to find a store in Tennessee that was selling it for $20. So, and they had two copies. I should have grabbed the other one.
As I said, I don't doubt, any of the people having blood, because, the blood is in strange places. My only problem is, and that's one of the reasons why we keep such a low profile as a community, is that, as I said, historically, there was a whole delegation of us that went out to Oklahoma in the 70s. We stayed with Philip Deer. I'm familiar with him. And at that time, there was very, very few of us. And as the years have gone by in Tennessee, it's gone from just us to now there's like maybe two or three pages full of people claiming to be Cherokee.
Oh, yeah. All over the place.
Yeah.
It's
like I said, when we made the migration and movement among all the elders in the 70s and early 80s when the old elders' councils were going on and when we interacted with the AIM people and all that back in the 70s, it was just a few of us. And
Philip Deer was very prominent in AIM and very highly respected.
Exactly.
And
we were always taught that he was the real power behind AIM, not Leonard. So we went straight to the horse's mouth. And
he fully endorsed what Diani does.
Yeah.
But now, all of a sudden, you know, Diani's a fraud, you're a fraud, Philip Deer's a fraud, you know, Mad Bear was a witch. I mean, you just wouldn't believe some of the stuff that people are saying. It's gainsaying to get the people to not to look at what they're doing wrong, but to, you know, get them to gravitate toward what they're saying. That's just the way evil works.
We feel like, you know, we've proven who we are, who we had to. That was the state of Tennessee. Then when they formed their first Indian Commission and the first director, Lavinia Butler, she sent out a statement also saying that we were recognized. We've taken a position. We don't have to keep, every time there's a change in an agency, every time there's a change at the state capitol, we don't have to keep re-identifying ourselves. You've done it once. There's no need to keep doing it. No one else is asked to do that except for Indian people.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. governor signed a proclamation
And that was predating the change in the law that now says the legislature has the acknowledge you. And that was also predating the law that, like I said, with the legislature. After that, it was just that the state's authorized Indian agency had to acknowledge you.
Right.
We have that in writing. Every time the government changes its guidelines, we aren't going to keep going through the same process.
Yeah, there's lots of federally recognized tribes that were recognized simply by signature of the President of the United States.
Exactly.
And
the government will tell you there are some people in those communities that aren't very Indian at all.
Well, and then, you know, Congress, you know, took that power away from him and vested it back in themselves. I mean, that's, they control Indian nations under the Commerce Clause.
Exactly.
But there's lots. I mean, to get in the area of Indian law, I mean, that's really fascinating. There's some really interesting things.
And that's one of the reasons why we really don't have any set-aside land. We live among the general population because we take the position that everything was ours originally, so why are you going to ghettoize us, you know?
That's right. Yeah, I know that's the way that Chickamauga felt. They said, you know, we're not going to be herded onto, you know, a reservation. We're going to be starved and abused, and, you know, we just disappear into the woods, and they did.
Exactly.
And they, you know, their saying is, we were never conquered. And, you know, we still got, you know, they purposely assimilated. It was traditional to bring in outside blood. So, you know, marrying whites was traditional, you know, because
always joke and say, you know, Iroquois and Cherokee are matrilineal people. So in theory, you know, if the mom is Cherokee, she could marry literally a four-legged dog and create a mutant, and technically that mutant would be a Cherokee.
That's right.
And I always say the way the earth is being affected and the way things are around us, who knows, you know, thousands of years from now, we might have four arms and three legs and four eyes, but we would still be Cherokee.
Well, after a few years of learning about, you know, the way we absorb people, I kind of started to look to Cherokee as kind of like the Borg. You know, it's useless to to resist. You know, eventually, everybody in another few generations, everybody in this country is going to be a Cherokee. You know?
Well, that's true.
I mean, there's one ethnologist.
I always tell people, you know, the Iroquois and the Cherokee were called eaters of men by other Indian people. And that gets into the whole thing about cannibalism and if it's true or not, you know, and that imagery was put forward in the Black Robe. But basically it means that, you know, as I say, we think our duty is to reharmonize the strangers that are here.
Right, absorb them.
Exactly. So
bring
they'll always
out.
Exist, regardless of how the people look. As I said, as long as the women are carrying the line, that's the main thing.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, they, I have heard that Atagulkala said that traditionally, you know, the single drop of blood rule, you know, was carried out to the 11th generation. Well, even the number 11, that's the most... in the ancient religion, that's the first religion on the planet, was totemism. Number 11 figures as the most important number. It's a symbolic number only.
Right. And the Etowah and myself and something like 18 other tribes are fortunate enough to tour Europe in 1992. We had met a lot of heads of state in various countries and stuff. And, got across our views of things. We weren't the only group traveling Europe at that time, but we were fortunate enough to meet a lot of heads of state, royalty, and elected.
Wow, I wasn't aware of that.
Oh yeah. We were in Spain. We spoke before the European Parliament and at The Hague. We were in Luxembourg, a number of places in Germany. We even got down the Danube pretty far.
I'll be darned.
So our view has been put forward across the earth. A number of prominent people are aware of our view. But as I say, we take the adage that we try to keep our house in order. And then we always keep a door open to other Cherokee-blooded people. Because we do maintain a lot of the old ways. At least that, you know, for our upper towns. Which, going back to the old pre-contact way, the Etowah maintained the old structure of sons, nobles, commoners, stingers. So the old class, Mississippian class system. And we feel within that system there's a place for everyone.
Have you ever read a book called The Ancient Atlantic? There is a picture of a coin. Matter of fact, I've scanned the book, parts of this book, and gotten up online. But now that we're talking about the Mississippians, you know we were a part of that.
Even though most science nowadays says that we weren't.
Well, you know, why did Redbird Smith, you know, go to the Natchez, you know, to for components of the fire and for...
Well, I must admit that you're talking about Archie Sam, and Archie Sam I knew personally, and he had a lot of influence on me. There are some people I show deference to, some that are dead and some that are still alive, like Billy Tyack with the Piscataways I'm very close with, and some other people, but in the past before he died, Archie Sam was one of those people, so we may have, you know, through him, taken a lot of that Natchez way, too, but, you know, when the French broke them up in the 1700s, quite a few of them came and lived among the Cherokee.
That's what I understand. Let me tell you a story and bounces off of you. John Red Hat told me that his grandmothers taught him that when we arrived up here the second time, because we had migrated, you know, more than once back and forth between here and down south. And it's interesting to note that the Kitu and Wampum belts are tied with Mexican seaweed. He said that we arrived here on the Ozark Plateau. Now, Dr. Tim Jones, who holds a double doctorate, was in the faculty at the University of Arizona. He has a doctorate in ethnology and archaeology, and it's a father of a new branch of archaeology called junk archaeology, where you go in and examine people's junk piles, you know. And but anyway, he a few years ago was able to scientifically prove that simply using archaeological digs that had been conducted a long time ago, and all he had to do was just go in and dust them off, because he was a White House fellow, member of the National Academy of Sciences, he could come and go out of the BIA and archives and everything. He says, I proved scientifically, going back 800 years, and he says, when I get the time, I will prove it back 1,500 years, that the original home of the Cherokees after the second invasion was the Ozark Plateau, and he says, we moved out from there. Now, what Red Hat said was, is that after we started from here, he says, then we start to move east, and we encounter the Mississippian people. He says this is what the Catuas, his grandmothers, taught him. He says, we fought a war with what they would call the mound builders. And of course, the idea that the mound builders were a tall, light-skinned people has been scientifically supposedly disproven, but this is what was taught to William Pidgeon by the last prophet of the Elk Nation, and this information was written down in a book in 1853.
And I had the pleasure of reading parts of that.
So right.
I know what you're talking about.
Right, and it introduced that book introduced the concept of ley or magnetic lines for the first time in history. But and I'll remember the name of the book here in a second. I'm just having a senior moment. But Pidgeon was taught that they were, tall, light-skinned people. Well, this is the same thing that what John Red Hat's grandmothers taught him. And we fought a war with them. And to resolve the war, we intermarried.
There's probably some truth to that. I've always been told that the people, that Cherokee people, and when I say people, that always keep in mind I'm talking about Cherokee people. That goes back once again to that thing that we're supposedly chosen. That the people began out on the prairie, the southern prairie or plains, just
mm-hmm.
like the Creeks and the Choctaws
mm-hmm.
and them. And that half of the people split and migrated north, and those became the Iroquoian people.
Mm-hmm.
And another group split and migrated a little bit further south than the northern group.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the ones that became the Cherokee. That really, in the past, I've known Lever Bearskin, the chief of the Wyandots in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
I was the guy who brought him here to Dublin, Ohio. Up in Dublin, there's the grave of Leatherlips, who was the chief that actually owned Wyandot chief, or Huron chief that actually owned Central Ohio.
Well, the Wyandots, the just past... I can't remember the name of the office, but he was the vice principal chief of the Cherokee Nation. A few years ago, he made a public statement. He says, we celebrate seven clans now. He says, but we know there was 14 or more. And it's interesting that, there are 14 federally recognized Iroquoian-speaking groups. And as I recall, the Wyandot are included in that, and the Huron. And
one of our legends is that eventually all the different factions will come together on a grand council
mm-hmm.
of Cherokee Iroquoian people.
Well, what the Catua teach is that the Catua, they said that the Creator told the Catua that they were... I don't think the term chosen people was... Basically, they just taught that if the Creator were to send a message to the nations, that it would be given to the Catua people first.
Well, we take the position of a chosen people because we're
right.
taught that all people at some point have divine beings or energies, Shekinah glory, whatever you want to call it, come down upon them. Now for us, we've maintained legends and the stories about Suyita at the Notijukahu or Jisa or the Pale One. So that's what we talk about, that only certain tribes like the Lakotas talk about him, East Coast Algonquins talk about him. So there was someone who walked among the nations, but he showed special preference for Cherokee people.
Interesting. Yeah, the of course, there's been the book written. Oh, the book we were talking about before was called The Traditions of Dikuda, published about 1856, as I recall. And He Walked the Americas was published in 63 by Lucille Taylor Hansen.
Now, Dikuda's book, we're taught that where Lexington, Kentucky is today, that was once one of their towns, that Paducah. That's what Paducah means, that was where they lived also. But we're taught that we eventually drew them and drove them across the Mississippi.
Yeah, that's what I was taught, was that the Sioux people, we drove them out onto the plains. And the other thing I want to ask you about was, David Michael Wolfe told me that there was a place up in the Cumberland Gap called Wasioto.
That's the old name of the mountains themselves before they took on the European name Cumberland.
Right, the place of the central fire. And he told me about an underground place that he has actually been into. He said the entrance is on federal, property. He says, but he said that there was a council chamber with a certain number of holes drilled in the roof. There were 8 chairs chiseled into, or 8 benches chiseled into the side of the one side of the room, and very obviously, it was a place that was. It was a cave that was, used for ceremonial purposes. And
for roughly 8 years, I worked at Olentangy Indian Caverns, which is north of Columbus. It's also near where Leather Lips is buried. And it's a fact that those caverns reach all the way into the Mammoth Cave system. So the Appalachians not only have the oldest mountains on the earth, the second oldest river on earth, that's the New River, but the largest cave system on earth.
Said to extend under the Mississippi River.
Right, and supposedly at its deepest levels, you'll still find the Uiuski, the little people, who were here before us.
Well, there were a couple of spelunkers, and I read this on an online list, but down somewhere around Mountain Home, Arkansas, they went into a cave. And they said they went at least a mile deep, at which point they encountered some kind of beings that were throwing rocks at them. And it was an interesting story. I haven't been able to find it here. Should have saved a copy of it, but I don't know. Of course, there's the story of the moon people that we encountered. Red Hat said that, after our war with the mound builders, And I kind of wondered, the Cherokee the men tend to be tall and a little darker than the women tend to be small and lighter skinned.
I agree there.
And I kind of wondered genetically, what the interaction was there. But he says, after our encounter with the mound builders, we continued to move into the Ohio Valley and we encountered the Iroquois. Now, and of course, and this is totally revolutionary, but what he said was that we fought a really nasty war with them.
Right, that's the war I told you that. A war of extermination. It was England in the 1750s that stopped that war. It had gone on since the dawn of time.
Well, what Red Hat said was that there was a resolution to that war, and he says the way we resolved that was the Cherokees agreed to stop speaking our original language and start speaking theirs. Isn't that wild?
I don't know about that. That might be true of the Western people. I know when I've been around Huron or Wyandotte people, a lot of our words are similar. Now, that just might be our dialect. You know, there are different dialects of Cherokee.
It's just a story, but think about the implications of that. And the fact that the last migration, according to Dr. Tim Jones, was about 1,500 years ago. And of course, we've been back and forth, up and down. And after, you know, we were herded into Oklahoma, we petitioned the government to, and I guess we actually had property for a colony lined up in Mexico, but the government wouldn't let us go. We wanted to go home. And the U.S. government says, nope. And, but 1,500 years ago is the same time, and of course, Chief Doctor Charles Rogers teaches that we lived alongside the Mayans, and 1,500 years ago was the time of the Great Drought, and that's been proven by going into taking core samples out of lake beds. It was proven that there was a Great Drought down in the Yucatan that 1,500 years ago that brought about the downfall of the last Mayan civilization.
That could very well be true. As I said, you know, we're taught that the clans and lineages were originally tribes.
Mm-hmm.
So some of our tribes could have come from Mexico.
Interesting.
And we do have a deep tie, as people, we do have a deep tie with Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why Sequoia went down there. He thought that we would never have peace in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, and do you know anything about the prophecy of a fourth Cherokee nation being, you know, recognized by the white governments?
You mean federally?
Yeah.
I haven't heard about that. Like I said, we're taught that all the different factions, state, federal, will come together on a grand council.
Right. What Dr. Rogers was taught was that once the whites recognized, and, you know, and Mexican government, Europeans, you know, once the Europeans recognized a fourth part of the Cherokee Nation on a government-to-government relationship, that there would be a healing. And
I mentioned to you that trip to Europe in 1992, and people within the community and my family have heard the stories a number of times. I won't divulge very much here, but things were told us in Europe as Indian people from those heads of state that if things changed in this country, the rest of the world would take a deep interest in us.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. Well, that says volumes. I won't even go there. But my wheels are turning.
Just for further food for thought, you have to remember, as bad as the Nazis were, Hitler loved Indian people.
Well, yeah. The only hint I will give the audience about what I'm thinking is the word sovereignty. That's as far as you need to go. So.
Right. As I said, you know, I keep a low key on that too.
Exactly. Exactly.
Some people say I talk too much.
Uh-huh. Yeah, me too. Really fascinating. So
as I said, you know, we're a powerful people. We have powerful spiritual energy, because I know for a fact that, you know, you hear about some of these programs like Stargate and remote viewing and things like that. I know for a fact that some agencies have approached some people in our community about the so-called power we have and the abilities we have. So people do take an awareness and interest in Cherokee people.
Well, you know, from what I understand, every Indian bunch in this country is scared to death of crystals, but that's what Cherokees do. And I was privileged to have a conversation night before last with Grandmother Jean Bustos, who... She's traveled all over the world. She's 69 years old, but she's a master. I can't remember the Cherokee word for it, but you can look up, do a Google search for Grandmother Jean, J-E-A-N, Bustos, B-U-S-T-O-S, and you'll come across her bio. She lives in Taos. And
I might add, we have some tribal members that are active in the Taos area too. We have our people, just like the old Pochtecas, the old priests you were talking about, like from Mexico.
Uh-huh.
We have a lot of people that move among the people, around the people, and their eyes and ears. One of the legends we're told, and that's why we also tend to keep a low profile and keep our nose clean, is that supposedly when this nation is reestablished, all the different divisions, it'll be the job of the Nighthawks to, in essence, hold the tribunals and judge those that have truly gone against the people, if you know what I mean.
So yeah, well, the Nighthawks held full sovereignty of the Cherokee Nation, around 1900. It was the sovereignty that was held by them that the Kituwa Band, after the Cherokee Nation was terminated in 1906 by the federal government after the Dawes enrollment period, it was the Nighthawks' sovereignty that was used to establish the United Kituwa Band as a federally recognized tribe in 1949, as I recall. Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma came about in the mid-70s after a decision that was made. A court decision. It wasn't Supreme Court, but they were ordered to start the governments back up after George Groundhog sued.
Touching back upon political things, I try to keep out of the political stuff. I've been told by a lot of the old militants, and we're talking about, aiming on back, into the community movement in the 60s in Oklahoma with the Cherokees and Creeks and Choctaws and them, that technically there is no Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma, and technically there are no Cherokees in Georgia, because both of those places' state constitutions to this day state that there can never be a sovereign tribal body within their borders.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all, in essence, paper things.
They are, Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma was established under the Oklahoma Indian Welfare Act, and, the Cherokee Constitution, why they didn't... Well, I have an idea why they didn't form themselves under the 1839 Constitution, because if they had, they would have, the Cherokee, the 1839 Constitution, Article 1, as I recall, allowed for for people who didn't have citizenship to memorialize at one point it said treasury, but it was a misprint, to memorialize the council about who they were, and, you pay a small fee and you get your citizenship back. But they didn't want those. They didn't want people like you and me and the Chickamaugas and other people in their nation, probably because they couldn't control us and they wanted, it was about money.
Exactly.
And in the 1880s, John Watts, who was Dragon Canoe's successor, John Watts' descendants got on the rolls, and Stan Hoag, H-O-I-G, wrote in his book Cherokee Empire that through a conspiracy between Chief Mays and Clem Rogers, who's Will Rogers' father, those people were thrown off the rolls.
To add to that, when we met with BIA officials in the 80s, and they reviewed our paperwork, there was one that came to Tennessee. He said, we had a very strong case. But he said to my face, and I'm quoting, in essence, quoting him, it was said to me, he said, but you'll never have a chance of being recognized because the Eastern Band's going to block everything you do.
Sure.
He said, now, if you take a different name, it'll breeze through, but I'm telling you, Eastern Band is going to fight you tooth and nail. And that's been true.
So you're talking about the Etowah name?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that the Eastern Band would be our biggest enemy. And they fight everything that goes on in North Carolina, against the Lumbees and them.
Well, it's interesting because what I was told about the North Carolina bunch, bless their hearts, our relatives, was that they were Junaluska's people, and they left the Cherokee Nation in 1813,
true,
took Miles Square Reservation. And, after...
And
the
I always tell people that that's a reservation because they ceased paying their taxes and state, and the state was going to seize the property. Instead of it being seized, they deeded it over to the federal government.
Right. Well, they were state recognized, but for a while, and of course, the whole thing, you know, Little Will Oostie, you know, the only reason why they've got any land is because, you know, they gave, they had to give a white person who they raised and became their chief, Little Will Oostie. He held title to their land, but they basically, they left the Cherokee Nation. They became U.S. citizens, took Miles Square reservations, were required to hunt down Jolly and his people who were charged with killing that soldier in the Trail of Tears incident.
Now, we maintain that it was even deeper than that, that Charlie was one of the old priests. And if you read Evan Jones's, he was technically the founder of the Kati, was in Oklahoma, you know. He was a Baptist missionary, European.
Evan Jones, yep.
He wrote that his biggest obstacle in North Carolina was Charlie. So we take the position that Charlie wasn't just a patriot. He was one of the old priests who was sacrificed in the name of the people.
Yep. Sounds about right. Sounds about right. And now you have the world is upside down. What's even interesting is that the seven-pointed star on the Cherokee seal is upside down.
Right.
You know, and now the original seal, 1839 seal, I've seen. It used to just be in a seal impression. It was very simple. It didn't have any colors. But that star was pointed up.
Mm-hmm.
So through some whatever, you know, flags and seals are very, very, very important. People don't understand.
And we have to keep in mind how deep our federal brothers have been in the Masonic camps, too. And that's
yep.
an entirely different subject.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and that is a very interesting subject. And for those that don't know, a year or two prior to the Civil War, after promising the Cherokee Nation that they would protect us, the federal troops pulled out of Fort Gibson, leaving a vacuum there. I mean, what was the Cherokee Nation supposed to do? You know, when we were approached by the man who wrote Morals and Dogma, the, you know, the Archmason, he was the a brigadier general. And
I always thought the southern states just told the old-timers that they would allow them more freedoms than the federal government.
Right.
And to a degree, that was true. The people reverted to scalping, whether that was good or bad, but the people did have more freedom under the stars and bars than they ever did under the flag.
That's right. And But Pike approached us. He was our Indian agent with Richmond, Albert Pike. And, you know, there's a lot of controversy, you know, about masonry and exactly what it is and what it isn't. But, you know, a friend of mine points out that Masons trace their lineage back to Tubal Cain, who was a descendant of Cain. You know, so, you know, what do even Bible-believing Christians want to have to do literally with Cain's priesthood?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's very controversial. I know one chief here in Missouri said that his grandfather was a 66th degree Mason, and which was, it was a degree that was, it was only given out to family. And that he and these people were Cherokee descendants also, but he said he and his brother were approached by the grandfather to take the, and there was a healthy stipend that went along with it too, but they didn't want to have anything to do with it, and they said that grandfather became very angry, never spoke to them again. So the Masons are very powerful, you know. The Joseph Smith got involved with them and completely changed the Mormon religion into something it wasn't before that. And
most people don't know that the Mormons did a lot of proselytizing in Oklahoma Cherokee in the 1840s. That's not really talked about.
Well, the Book of Mormon was supposed to be given to the Indians, period. And they were supposed to build it up. It was not... Yeah, it was... There's a fella here that lives about 6 miles south of me here in Kabul that left the reorganized, the RLDS church, you know, after having proven the real history of what happened and documented and made 14 hours of videos about it. But Joseph Smith, they were totally interested in Native people. Brigham Young said that if Zion ever was redeemed, and we're talking about an event like you and I talked about before where people would become translated, he says that we would only assist the Indians.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting
right.
garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond.
Put it
under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on. The
it's
Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
That they would be the real power, that they would build a new Jerusalem, and but the white Europeans have completely taken over and changed these religions into something that they really originally weren't. You know, the first, to show you how early these ideas were co-opted in the Mormon religion, after the Mormons left, were driven out of Missouri, and they had been taught not to harm Indians and, you know, to intermarry with them if they could and to learn everything they could from them. The first big Indian massacre happened because a cow that wandered into that Sioux Indian camp.
Sure.
And then there was another, the Bear River massacre of the Northern Shoshones. You know, 300 people, the California militia came into to Utah, and they massacred over 300 Shoshones. The Mormons fought wars with the Wakara, with the Utes, but there were two Ute chiefs whose paintings hung in the Manti Temple. So, you know, during the earliest periods, you know, the Mormons are told embrace Native people, hands off, but then that changed. One of my pet peeves, so I don't.
I'm getting the high sign, so.
Well, we'll continue. Let's
definitely.
Do a...
I would like to, you know, I would like to share more. We just touched upon things that I know about. As I said, we always keep an open door.
I'd like to do a series, you know, about once a month. Get you on the phone and let's do a series on you know who and what Cherokees really are.
I would have no problem with that.
Well, Chief, you, Uku, appreciate you. This has been fascinating, and like I said, when we have a Cherokee on, you know, we get literally hundreds of people that listen to these interviews, and it's a good way of documenting, you know, what you want. It's a way for you to teach, you know, when you're asleep. Yeah, you know, people could just come and listen wherever they want to.
And as I mentioned to you, you know, I just by accident, totally by accident, came across your website, so it must have been meant to be. As I say, you know, there are higher powers and forces.
Sure. I've been trying to get a hold of you for at least 10 years.
That's what you said.
And, but given you...
You got to put your nose closer to the ground.
Well, you guys file for federal recognition and then
at that point I decided, you know how the federal government is.
Mm-hmm.
At that point I took the position we have to get our house in order.
Right.
To take on them because they have big pockets. And,
oh yeah.
Yeah, and I told you what one of their representatives told us that we're battling not just them but the federal charity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't want because they don't want to share the money.
Exactly.
It's all about monies. And, but, you know...
We've kept our pedigree, and, you know, I'm legally Indian, and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagined the state of Tennessee recognizes individuals as Indians.
Well,
and,
right now they're not doing much anything, because we have our activist element down there that is on the edge that keeps things rattled. So, you know, every time the state tries to do the right thing, somebody is offended, and then the cart spilled, you know.
Well, from what I understood, they abolished the Indian Council down there. Have they reorganized yet? We'll talk about that in the next interview.
They're trying to, but as I said, I'd be happy to come on and talk some more.
Sure. Yeah, well, let's do that. Yeah, once a month, we'll just make it a regular, we'll talk more about this.
Okay. Your listeners, you know, if you can send Blue out or something and kind of frame our discussions, I have no problem with that.
Absolutely, and I don't know if you guys don't have a website, but if you are interested in getting one up, even if it's a one-pager, you know, with the email contact, I'd be glad to help you with that.
Okay, we'll definitely talk about that, because like I said, I've been drug kicking and screaming into the... For centuries my kids.
Straight from the 19th. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Chief.
We'll definitely do that.
Thanks so much.
Just give me a call.
Hey, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you again real soon.
No problem. Take care.
Bye-bye now.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet, all for $9.99, formerly priced at $29.99. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
You want to get an edge on turning back the clock with just a few pills? Who doesn't? Well, it's no longer science fiction, but science possibility, a potential breakthrough. As I found out firsthand, there may be a way to erase years, at least inside my body. Granted, it's down the road, but some scientists are wondering if a new pill I took might offer a very long life.
It may not look like the Fountain of Youth, but inside this nondescript building, I'm about to become part of an exciting experiment, a kind of guinea pig.
Dr. McCord, okay.
I'm here at the University of Colorado in Denver to meet Dr. Joe McCord, a world-renowned scientist.
This is pretty exciting stuff you're finding, huh?
It is. We're very excited about it.
His latest research could very well unravel the mystery of aging itself. And his decades of experiments may have the potential of adding years to people's lives and possibly prevent chronic diseases like cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. It all centers around this small yellow pill, and for me, it begins with a blood test.
It wouldn't be the first time I've given blood for this company.
They want to check my levels of something called T-bars, which is a rough indicator of a person's actual age. T-bars can identify a condition known as oxidative stress, a kind of measure of the wear and tear on our bodies. Oxidative stress, like the rusting of an engine, is not a good thing.
Bad for the body.
Leading to disease.
Leading to disease and leading to malfunction and, importantly, leading to what we call aging. It is a slow progression of increasing oxidative stress. That's the main characteristic biochemically of the aging process.
The problem of aging begins with the very food we eat to give us energy. As our cells burn that food, they also release toxic chemicals. Those chemicals, you may know them as free radicals, react with all the components of our cells, literally bombarding them millions of times per second, damaging all our cells. The result? Oxidative stress. And we all have it. The body fights back with a system of defenses. It makes two antioxidant enzymes, catalase and SOD, whose job is to gobble up the free radicals before they can harm our cells.
So, doctor, how often do I take these?
And so, here I go. With that swallow, I've just become part of a potentially landmark scientific experiment.
Doesn't taste bad.
It's called Protandim, and tests on both mice and humans have already shown that it revs up the manufacture of those good enzymes in our bodies. More enzymes, fewer free radicals to harm us. Whether that will lead to longer life is still unknown. Experiments to see if mice live longer are about to get underway, but it's a tantalizing theory.
Right now, all we know is that this preparation decreases oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is not a disease, just like aging is not in itself a disease, but it's something that accompanies and is attached to many disease processes. So you can see the age-related...
Normally, oxidative stress, measured by those T-bars, increases with age. But in Dr. McCord's tests, taking just one pill of Protandim a day reversed that trend for everyone at every age, even for an 80-year-old.
They all are reduced to the level of oxidative stress that one would expect, frankly, in a newborn or a very young child.
Back to the oxidative stress levels of a child? It sounds too good to be true. Will Protandim work on me?
The scientific evidence is there. The pieces seem to make sense. The question is, does this translate into something that humans can take advantage of?
And so, ancient Eastern healing and modern Western medicine may soon be working together. High oxidative stress is associated with more than aging. It's been linked to hundreds of illnesses.
It's at the very center of many diseases. Liver disease, diabetes, emphysema, asthma. I've studied all of these. Strokes, heart attacks.
Even mental disease.
Yes.
Depression?
Alzheimer's disease, depression.
Dr. James Crapo with the National Jewish Medical Center in Denver is also researching Protandim for the company.
Are you saying that this could be a cure-all?
You're looking at something that will have a small impact, but an important impact.
We make no claims about curing any disease or preventing any disease. We hope that when enough studies are done, perhaps such claims might be able to be made in the future.
Clinical studies to assess Protandim in both diabetes and heart disease should start in 3 to 4 months. But what about my progress? After nearly 2 weeks now, it's time to get my results. Dr. McCord calculates the numbers. The result? My level of oxidative stress has declined dramatically.
45%. That's excellent.
Just look at where I fall on the graph, before and after.
Which, if extrapolated back, is the level you would see in a newborn baby.
Have we turned back the clock? Well, maybe not on the outside, but deep inside, within my cells, yes, indeed.
Would you suggest I keep taking this supplement?
I would. I can't guarantee it's going to extend your life. I can't guarantee it's going to eliminate any diseases or cure any diseases.
But we do know that oxidative stress is part of those disease processes. I don't want to wait until I'm 80 years old and find out that I should have taken it.
For more, go to our website at abcnews.com.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Major universities and government agencies initiated and continue self-funded studies following the ABC Primetime Investigative Report you just viewed that originally aired in 2005. These studies continue to reveal more scientific evidence about Protandim's unique benefits. They are published in major scientific and medical journals. The next video will bring you up to date.
Developed after 40 years of research and exclusively for LifeVantage, Protandim is a true scientific breakthrough in anti-aging. Protandim has been reported on ABC, NBC, and PBS, featured in the Wall Street Journal, and described in CNN Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta's book, Chasing Life, The Quest for Immortality. Protandim's creator, Dr. Joe McCord, is a world-renowned scientist and a pioneer in free radical biology. Dr. McCord is the discoverer of the key anti-aging enzyme, superoxide dismutase. His role in the discovery is so significant, the enzyme is measured in McCord units. For Dr. McCord's discovery of superoxide dismutase and his contributions in free radical biology, he was awarded the Elliott Cresson Medal. This medal is awarded to distinguished inventors and scientists, putting Dr. McCord in the same company as Pierre and Marie Curie, Alexander Graham Bell, Orville Wright, and Henry Ford. Dr. Joe McCord has devoted his life's work to the study of free radicals, their role in aging, and the many problems associated with aging. Consumers spend billions every year on antioxidants in the form of food and supplements, hoping to reduce these free radicals. But antioxidants from these sources can only eliminate one free radical for every one antioxidant molecule you consume. Protandim is scientifically proven to slow cellular damage caused by free radicals. Taking one Protandim one time per day for 30 days turns on these anti-aging enzymes in your body. Your own enzymes eliminate free radicals at a rate of 1 million to 1.
I think any other supplements that are designed to be antioxidant supplements probably are no longer needed because Protandim solves that problem in a much more effective way.
Protandim is a breakthrough poised to revolutionize the anti-aging industry. It is an entirely new and scientifically validated way to fight aging, reducing your oxidative stress levels to that of a 20-year-old after just 30 days.
We found, as many other scientists had documented, that there is a progressive increase in T-bars in your blood the older you get. When these same people took Protandim for 30 days, the age-dependent increase in lipid peroxidation was completely eliminated. After Protandim, we could no longer distinguish the 80-year-old from the 20-year-old.
Protandim is protected by 3 U.S. patents. Universities around the world continue to initiate and fund their own studies of Protandim and to evaluate how this anti-aging breakthrough can prevent and improve many of the hundreds of problems associated with aging.
Many academic scientists at a number of universities have begun studying Protandim because it represents a new tool. It represents a way of reducing oxidative stress that wasn't available before. There simply was not a good way of doing what Protandim does. Protandim interacts with the DNA in your cells and causes the cells to make more of a set of genes called survival genes. The ingredients in Protandim were actually selected because they are largely metabolized by the liver, which does not interfere with most prescription drugs, which are generally metabolized by the kidneys. So the general answer to that is yes, it is safe. The immediate benefits of Protandim are within several days, the biochemical markers of oxidative stress begin to decrease. And while these are immediate improvements, you may not sense that these things are happening, just as you can't sense what your cholesterol level is, if it's high or low. But nonetheless, these benefits start happening within days of taking Protandim. The advantages to taking Protandim in the long term are that it protects your body from the relentless progression of free radical damage as we age. The anti-aging aspect of Protandim is one that accumulates over time. So the longer you take it, the more protection you will sustain. Missing a dose of Protandim is not a big problem. It takes about 2 weeks for the effects to go away. So if you miss it for 2 weeks, you're pretty much back to where you started from.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Good afternoon. These are on, I presume. I'd like to talk to you today, and do I have control of these slides, or is I do? Okay. Let's get through these really quick, because this is just because you have to get CMEs, and I have to tell you that I am on the Speakers Bureau for GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, and also a nutritional consultant for an HIV nutritional company named Biosource Therapeutics, which has nothing to do with what I'm talking about today. What I'd like to talk to you about is something that I find thoroughly fascinating. It is glutathione. It is one of the four endogenous antioxidants, and it is one that I must admit, despite 80,000 published articles in the English literature, through medical school, internship, residency, fellowship, and a fairly long time in academic medicine, I knew nothing about. It is a very interesting molecule because it exists in an accelerated or increased energy state. The energy state is, or increased energy state, is caused by the fact that it's got a free sulfhydryl group and therefore can easily donate the hydrogen to an electron and therefore quench a free radical. Now, let me tell you, because I think it's important, and it is a little bit of a divergence, but I learned about glutathione because of something that you probably all have seen in your practice, and that is a low uric acid. Now, when I was in medical school and when I was a professor of oncology, the only thing I knew about uric acid is when you had a kid that you were going to treat for leukemia, you put him on allopurinol to keep the uric acid down. I knew nothing about uric acid being low, except it kept appearing, and it appeared in about 20% of my patients, and that just didn't make sense. So I finally went into PubMed, and after stumbling around for a long time, I found out that uric acid is the last antioxidant your body uses when it's run out of everything else. When it's run out of gas, okay, it uses uric acid. Interesting. So if that's the last, the question then, what was the first? And that is where I got into glutathione. I've been coming to some of these meetings for a while, and glutathione is very important for a number of things, not all of which I'm going to go into today. But in point of fact, it has a great deal to do with not only well-being, okay, but aging well, or if you will, retarding the aging process. So I think it's very applicable. I'd like to, at the risk of repeating things that you already know, go over some of the things that glutathione is important about. Alone in the antioxidant world, okay, every other antioxidant, when it becomes oxidized, becomes itself a free radical. Glutathione doesn't. It actually recycles other antioxidants. In fact, the body considers it so important that up to 6% of the entire ATP expenditure or energy expenditure of the body may be used to synthesize and optimize glutathione levels. That's pretty impressive, 6% of the entire energy output of the body. It is also the only non-enzyme antioxidant that doesn't become a free radical, and in fact has a very interesting corollary when it becomes oxidized, because what happens is it complexes to another spent glutathione molecule, and the compound then becomes GSSG, and GSSG has been shown in animal studies at least to promote and induce delta wave sleep. We all know the importance of that in terms of the aging process, so this, even in its used up form, functions as a very useful product. It not only functions as an antioxidant itself, but alone again in the world of antioxidants, it is an absolutely essential component of antioxidant enzymes, namely glutathione peroxidase, and most importantly, the glutathione transferases. And I bring that up because glutathione transferase abnormalities have now been associated with virtually every cancer known to man, and probably with a lot more than that. And therefore, by promoting the production of glutathione transferases through improving glutathione, we may be doing even more than I'm able to talk about right now. In addition, if that were not enough, let's keep going. It's a chelator. In fact, it's 50% as effective as oral chelation in getting rid of mercury. It has an effect on other heavy metals, but they're not as pronounced as mercury, and mercury is pretty ubiquitous in an environment, so it kind of comes as a freebie. And it detoxifies organic pollutants, perhaps the best known one of which is the 2-carbon fragment that we know as alcohol. And in fact, without glutathione, you ultimately get a hangover because you stop the process at acetaldehyde, which is phase one detox, and that in itself is a free radical. And obviously, many of us may have felt the effects of that if we didn't have enough glutathione. Now, why is it important in aging? Well, these are old data, and I think they're probably not as robust as they should be, but I'll give you what is available now. Glutathione levels decrease with age. The data would suggest it's 1% a year beginning in the 20s. I think that's too little, too late, but that's only my opinion right now. I haven't proved it. There are some very interesting things, though. Age-matched normals, okay, reveal that anybody at, say, 45 who's had his first heart attack or has asthma or whatever other disease you want to use has a lower glutathione level than somebody of that age who's well. So disease causes decrease in glutathione and an accelerated decrease compared to normals. Glutathione happens to be, and this is perhaps the take-home message, it's the major protector of mitochondrial DNA. Mitochondrial DNA is that DNA within the cells that's responsible, if you will, for the electron transport chain that produces every bit of energy in your body. And we know from pathologic data that if you take a biopsy from a 90-year-old and compare it to a biopsy in a 5-year-old, the mitochondrial DNA in the 90-year-old is only 5% normal compared to the 5-year-old. So obviously we destroy our mitochondrial DNA, we destroy our energy, and we age. Maintenance of normal mitochondrial DNA is directly correlated, and it's got an R value above 9.9, with aging. So the higher your glutathione, the less you age. And I think
it's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Let the truth be known.